Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. And now, drive-in movies. Full disclosure, I've never actually been to one, but I think I'm about to be schooled by our listeners and our next guest. April Wright is the director of Going Attractions, a documentary about the drive-in movie culture of the 1950s. It's showing next weekend at the Independence Film, Art, and Music Festival. You can check the Central Standard page on kcr.org for showtimes. April's joining us from the studios at NPR West in Los Angeles. Hi, April.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm wondering, why did you decide to make this film?
Well, I went to drive-ins growing up, and I basically wanted to know for myself what happened to them. Once it got into the 80s, I would drive around and see a lot of them still standing but not operating anymore, and I wanted to know what happened. And when I first looked into the idea, there were still about 1,000 drive-ins left. This was over 10 years ago, and then it kept coming up about 7 years ago, the idea of making a documentary. And when I looked into it, there were only 500 left. So I thought I better do it now before they're all gone.
And I take it that you enjoyed yourself at the drive-in movies in the 80s. It wasn't the heyday of drive-ins.
Well, I think you're the rare case of somebody who has never gone. I think for most generations that grew up in the United States through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and a little bit into the 80s, that it was pretty much a common experience for almost anyone who grew up in the United States that they would go to the drive-in.
That's interesting. I grew up in New York City, so maybe that's why people didn't have cars as much.
There was one in Long Island, but yeah.
Well, and I want to hear from the audience. Tell us about our local drive-in movie theaters. How has the scene changed? What do you remember from your youth? Join the conversation by calling in 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're here with April Wright. I wonder if you can take us back. Who first thought of the idea of a drive-in movie?
The first drive-in opened in Camden, New Jersey in 1933, and it was invented by a gentleman named Richard Hollingshead Jr. His son appears in my film telling the story of how his dad invented it, and it was for the inventor's mother because at that time the movie houses, I don't know if you've ever been, if you go to a real old movie palace even today that still has its original seats, the seats are very small. I don't know if people just used to be smaller back in the 30s, but his mother was 6 feet tall, and so she had a difficult time sitting in those seats at a normal theater. So he had the idea of allowing her to see movies. So he put a projector on the hood of the car and put up a sheet in the yard and invented the idea, and he patented it. And opened the first one in 1933, which is exactly 80 years ago this summer.
And how did they get popular?
There were about 100 drive-ins prior to World War II off of this initial invention in the 30s. But really, they took off like crazy after World War II when you had the baby boom and car culture kind of emerging after the war and a whole movement out of city centers into the suburbs. So it was part of this whole combination of affluence that happened after the war.
And one of the classic images from the heyday of drive-in movies is two teenagers on a date. And I know we do have a clip from the film of that about teenagers that we're going to hear just now.
Once the teenagers found the newfound freedom of being able to drive and own their own automobiles, you know, the drive-in was a place to go.
Teenagers now were beginning to have cars. They had more expendable income.
Here we have a whole generation of people that all of a sudden, their main pursuit is fun.
And April, when was this that teens suddenly got the keys to the car?
Yeah, well, originally after the war, it was families, family-oriented. And then it kind of shifted in the 50s and into the 60s and did become a teenager hangout. And part of that was related to television, because prior to that, at home, people would listen to radio programs and then they would go out to see a movie at the drive-in as a family. When TV came into the homes in big numbers in the early 50s, the families would stay home, and that's when the teenagers kind of took over the drive-in. And that's really the first time that you had teenagers that had their own cars and their own transportation and were kind of separate from the family unit. So, again, culturally, things were happening that just kind of made that the thing to do.
You, I think, wrote that this was the time that the teenager really became the teenager, and they kind of became independent and started making their own choices in terms of entertainment.
Yeah, well, teens actually influenced the types of movies being made. Because of the teenage audience at the drive-ins, we had the introduction of things like campy horror films that didn't really exist before that time, and a lot of the films that Roger Corman and filmmakers like that made. Also, there was no such subgenre as beach movies, so all the Frankie and Annette movies, that didn't exist. That subgenre was created for audiences at the drive-in. Same thing with biker movies, you know, just a lot of these things that turned into drive-in fare were made specifically for that audience that was going to drive-ins in those eras.
Well, a couple of people on my Facebook page talk about sneaking people into the trunk or buck a car nights at the drive-in where you'd try and shove as many people as possible into a car for the movie. Wonder what kind of shenanigans you heard about from people who went to the drive-in as teenagers.
Yeah, sneaking into the trunk or sneaking in general, everybody's got stories about that. A few people tell some of them in the movie. So, that was a common thing. Also, you know, sometimes getting busted for it either on the way or in or inside and getting kicked out. A lot of people have those stories. Someone told me a recent story of, you know, coming into a drive-in. It was an elderly man, and they could see the back of the car was weighed down. When they opened it up, his wife was in there, and they were in their 60s, and they told the drive-in owner that they were trying to relive their youth, so that's why they were trying to sneak her in again. So, that definitely happened. And the carload pricing, there are a few drive-ins today that do carload pricing on certain nights. And when they do, it's not a buck anymore. It's usually $20 or something like that. But that notion of carload pricing and that kind of thing, they definitely did that a lot, especially back in the 50s and the 60s with the teen audience that was coming.
And when you start asking people about their memories of drive-in movie theaters, what do you hear?
Well, I don't have to ask. What's funny is as soon as people get on this topic, they want to talk about their memories of going to the drive-in. And it's funny because it really makes an impression on people, and it creates kind of a visceral memory where they can tell me, you know, what they were wearing and what kind of car they were in and what they ate and what, you know, they remember details. And I think that's really the key about the drive-in experience is that it is an experience. It's not just about seeing a movie. It is about the whole experience of being there, the people that you're with in your car, because you can talk and communicate. There's much better food at drive-ins, so a lot of people will have dinner there. When I was a kid, almost all of them had playgrounds. Some of them still have them today, but many don't. But, you know, you would go play on the playground. So it was like a whole night of entertainment and family time. So I think it made an impression on people.
I hear that the Boulevard Drive-In Theater, which is still operating here in Kansas City, used to have monkeys in a cage in front of the screen. And maybe one of our callers can tell us a little bit about that. But I wonder what other really unique or unusual things you heard about at particular drive-in theaters around the country.
Yeah, I did visit Wes Neal, who's the owner of the Boulevard Drive-In, and he does appear in the film, and he told me they did have monkey cages. A lot of drive-ins had novelty attractions like that, so there were bumper boats at some, mini golf. Some have mini golf still today. There were train rides, little trains that would go around the screen, and all sorts of, you know, from basic playground equipment up to little, you know, Ferris wheels and things like that. There were, you know, just different novelty kinds of things. Some would have concerts before, you know, just different types of events to go with different films. So creating that kind of circus-like atmosphere and a big event out of the night at the drive-in is definitely something that they've done and that a lot of them still do today.
And what was the same at drive-in theaters everywhere?
The same.
Because there's something essential about that experience.
Yeah, I mean, every drive-in is unique, especially today because there are no big chains that own them any longer. Every drive-in today is an individual entrepreneur or a family that owns them. So they're definitely unique today. I mean, the things in common, you know, they all have a screen, they all have a projection room, and they all have a, you know, a snack bar and a ticket booth. I mean, and a marquee in many cases. I mean, those are just sort of the physical elements. But other than that, everyone usually has something unique about it, either unique about the marquee, unique about how it's constructed. So if you're traveling, you visit different drive-ins, you'll notice different things about each one.
Now, tell me about those famous intermission trailers.
Mm-hmm. I actually have in the film Robbie Mack, who is of the family that has the company called Film Mack that made many of the famous trailers, and he's the third generation owner of this company. So if you've ever seen, like in the movie Grease, the dancing hot dog that flips into the bun, the countdown clock, the trailer Let's All Go to the Lobby, he talked about his family making those trailers and how they had animation equipment that only them and Disney had, that they were doing these, artistic animated trailers back at the time. So that was a big business, and it still is today. They still make trailers today. There's tons of really cool, old, kitschy drive-in intermission trailers that encourage you to go to the snack bar or to, patronize businesses in your community. There's all sorts of messages on them. They're kind of funny. And a lot of drive-ins still play them. Many of them have been converted to digital. So even today, a lot of them are still being played, even the older trailers.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Our guest is April Wright, and we're talking about her film Going Attractions, about drive-in movies. Are you still a drive-in movie fan? What do you love about them? What makes it different from going to a regular movie theater? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can post your comments to Facebook or Twitter. We are at KCURCST. So, April, I'm wondering what kind of people ran drive-in movie theaters or still run them today. Does it take a certain kind of personality?
Passionate people. It's, like I said, they're a family-oriented business, and they do take a lot of time and effort because, you're putting on the show each night. They're basically kind of view themselves as the local Hollywood, and you're putting the show on screens or on multiple screens. You're bringing in a crowd, dealing with the public. Then there's just all the normal maintenance of it. It takes a lot of work and a lot of effort. And during the summer months in particular, these families that operate the drive-ins, that's pretty much what takes all their time and energy. You're up really late at night, until the last screening is done. And most of them that are operating them today, although they are, many of them are doing record business and they're hugely popular right now, a lot of the owners realize that they possibly could sell their property and make more money, but they're not in it for that. They're in it because they want to preserve the drive-ins for future generations. And they enjoy seeing the families come and having the experience and having the family time and having the enjoyment. So they're all very passionate about what they're doing and that this is something that they want to keep in their communities.
And you mentioned you went to visit hundreds of theaters around the country to make this film, starting 7 or 8 years ago. I wonder, where did you even decide to start?
Yeah, I took the first road trip in 2006, and I basically went through the southwestern United States first just as kind of a proof of concept to see what I would find. And I think it would be a lot easier if I were making it today because you can get maps on your cell phone and that kind of thing. Even 7 years ago when I went, I had to do a bunch of research beforehand. And I was going off of just little posts that, people made on different websites saying that they'd driven past a certain area and they'd seen a drive-in screen. So I didn't know exactly what I was going to find. But when I went out there, I visited not only open drive-ins, but abandoned drive-ins and remains of drive-ins, and in some cases, the former site to see what did it become, what's there today. And on that first trip, I found plenty of stuff. So I made 2 other cross-country road trips, and I ended up visiting over a 3-year period every single state except for Alaska. I still didn't get to Alaska.
Are there a lot of drive-in movie theaters in Alaska?
There's none open now, but there were drive-ins. Yeah, Alaska had 15 or 20 drive-ins, and there's certain times of the year where it's dark around the clock, so they used to show movies all the time. So they were popular there at one time. But I ended up visiting about 500 total, you know, either open, wow, abandoned, or former sites of drive-ins. So I've been everywhere.
Well, we have a bunch of calls right now with people with their memories of drive-in movies. We have Jeff from Parkville. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Tell us what you remember.
My biggest memory, I know it sounds kind of ridiculous, but it's those gigantic metal speakers that you hooked onto your window that had really bad sound, or you couldn't control the sound. And I was wondering if that's something that was pretty typical for drive-ins across the country, or just the drive-in that I went to in Toledo.
April?
Yeah. Okay, the whole history of the speaker, the early drive-ins did not have individual speakers. They had big, giant speakers up in front, either on top of the screen or near the screen, that would just sort of blow out at the whole audience. And quickly, that idea didn't work very well because everyone in the whole community could hear the movie. So this individual speaker idea emerged pretty early. And that was standard for all the drive-ins. And they weren't very good quality. They would get tinny over time because of being outdoors. And there was also a tremendous amount of maintenance because there was all the wiring under the drive-in and up through all the poles. The speakers in general got taken out in the early 80s, and drive-ins moved to radio sound. So basically, it just comes over a frequency, and you get it on your car radio. And originally, it was on AM because most of the cars didn't have FM at that time. But now, all the drive-ins that are still open and operating operate off of FM radio. So if you've got a good sound system in your car, it sounds excellent. Huh. And a few of the drive-ins do keep and maintain their speakers. There's a handful of them around the country that you can still find the speakers if you want to have that authentic experience.
And not really be able to hear.
They do have them at the Boulevard in Kansas City. So if you want to try out a speaker and see and check it out, you can.
Well, here we also have William from Independence. Hi, William.
Hi.
What do you remember about the drive-in, or do you still go?
Pretty much, I was a kid during that era, and I grew up in California, and we went to the drive-ins frequently. And as I had mentioned earlier, one of the things that was always a sign we knew was going on that night was when Mom would load the mattress into the back of the station wagon, because we knew we were...
Oh, I'm sorry. We just lost... William, if you could please call back in. I'm so sorry I lost you. We were just hearing about William's drive-in experience. We also have Larry in Overland Park. Hi, Larry.
Hello. I was driving across a nonstop trip from Utah to Kansas City several years ago. And in Southwest Colorado, came across a motel that had a theater screen, and the units are all ranged around the theater screen. I wonder if this is a common thing in other parts of the country, or I'd never seen or even heard of anything like that before, and I can take comments off the line.
Thank you.
Yes, that's the Movie Manor Hotel. That's in Monte Vista, Colorado, and I have a shot of that in the film. When I did my research, there actually were 5 or 6 of these around the country, and there's actually 2 still operating today. Aside from that one in Colorado, there's one in Vermont that is a motel drive-in. And, at both of these, you can park your car, or they have motels that are around the screens, and you can watch it from your motel room.
Now, we have William back from Overland Park. William, so sorry that we hung up on you by mistake.
Oh, that's okay. I'm in Independence, actually.
Oh, yes, in Independence. Go ahead.
I was saying, the whole mom loading the mattress into the back of the large station wagon, because there were 5 of us kids. But another big fond memory that I always enjoy, even to this day, and share with my kids, was because we had the playground there. And because, of course, 9 times out of 10, after sunset, most of us kids would fall asleep, mom always had us dressed in the jammies. And the playground at the drive-in was like it was like a giant sleepover. It's the only place in the world where you could play outside on the playground in your pajamas. And I just remember lots of us kids running around in our little footy zippered pajamas or little flannel nighties playing in the playground before the movie started.
Oh, that's funny. April, did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah, that's very common. Everybody did that. The kids come to the drive in their pajamas, and then many times the first film is a kid-friendly film, and then they know the kids are going to go to sleep, so the second feature might be more adult-oriented, but yeah, everybody had, that's a great memory.
And so that's kind of a classic story that goes on mm-hmm. today. I wonder, I know that you also, in the film, discuss the resurgence of drive-in movies, and although there are still more closing than have opened. We're going to hear a clip now about that from your film, Going Attractions, and here we go.
The atmosphere that we want to create here is a very friendly, very safe, family atmosphere where people can come together as a community. If they sit in their car, we hope they'll talk to their neighbor. We live in a world where the garage doors come down and people are very scheduled in terms of their time. So providing a family and community-oriented activity is critical to what we're trying to accomplish here.
April, can you tell us who that was talking?
Oh, I'm blanking on his name. I'm sorry.
It's a, Bob, I guess, Bob, operator.
Bob, it's Bob Deutch. Bob Deutch.
And he's the operator of a current drive-in movie theater.
He owns a company that does blow-up drive-in screens.
Oh,
so there's a lot of, you're talking about the resurgence, and that's actually one aspect that's happening right now. There's really three different ways that are reflecting that people are very, very interested in the drive-in idea. One is that there are a lot of brand new drive-ins being built from scratch. Since the year 2000, about 35 new ones have gone up. There's also been over 30 old drive-ins refurbished and reopened. And then we're also seeing all around the country these blow-up screens being set up either in a temporary or a semi-permanent situation. Often in cities, there's one in Austin, Texas now. There's one in L.A. There's one on a rooftop in New York, where they're trying to recreate the drive-in experience in cities where they don't have a drive-in any longer. So lots of things going on to try to recapture this drive-in communal experience.
And how does the experience compare to what it was like decades ago?
You know, it's really come full circle. We talked earlier in the program about how after the war it was part of the baby boomer experience and that the families would go, and then it did go through a teen era. And then attendance fell off a little bit for a lot of different reasons that you'll see in the film. But with the resurgence that's been happening in the last 15 years or so, it's come full circle. It's families again. And a lot of that has to do with the types of films that are coming out right now. All the animated films, superhero films are great family fare. They play really well at the drive-in. And there are a lot of people interested in these simpler family experiences again around the country. So drive-ins are hugely popular right now, and they've kind of come full circle. They're really catering to the families again like they did in the beginning.
We have a call here. It's Barbara from Parkville. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I didn't get to hear the whole show, so I don't know if you've heard a similar story already, but in the 60s, when I was in high school, I was finally allowed to date when I was maybe a junior, and I could go on a date every other weekend. And my boyfriend and I went to the drive-in movie every single time we had a date, but we had to make sure we went and saw a show that was also playing at the walk-in, because I lied about it every single time.
You told your parents you were going to the walk-in?
We went to the Rialto, but we never did. We went to the Starlight Drive-In.
And why was that?
We wanted to make out.
And you just couldn't do that at the movie theater, huh?
No.
Did you hear that story, April?
That's a great story. Yeah, I mean, culturally, things were different back then. I think, you know, there's a little bit of commentary on that in my film that, you know, today teenagers can, you know, make out at home. it's different than it was at that time, you know, where you're saying that you were allowed to date and that you could only go out every other weekend and these kind of rules. You know, society has shifted a little bit, so there's not so much the need for a place to go like that. But definitely in the 50s and the 60s, that was a place where teens went on dates because they could, you know, make out.
We have a few more memories from Shell in Leawood. Hi, Shell.
Hi.
We have just about a minute left here.
Okay, I grew up in the St. Louis area in the 50s, getting my license in 1959, and used to go out to drive-in, and the most interesting memory to me that I have is one of the people I went to high school with bought an 8-door bus and took it into school to shop class, cut off the top, and made it a convertible, although it didn't have a top. And one time we went to, a bunch of us went to the drive-in for Buck Night in his 8-door convertible bus.
That's great.
Had a lot of fun with that. The other memory, the other thing I remember is in Kansas City, we moved out to near 123rd and State Line, and the State Line drive-in was had been located there, and it was torn down. And for some strange reason, some of the homeowners around that area did not want to have that area redeveloped into a little shopping center where there's a Hy-Vee right now. So they protested. So the developer said, okay, that's fine. I will, I will just reopen my drive-in. And, of course, opposition suddenly ceased, and they built the Hy-Vee, which is well-utilized now.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Shell, for the call. April, I know you talk about development and land prices in your film. We were just talking to April Wright, director of Going Attractions, which is showing next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend at the Independence Film, Art, and Music Festival. You can find out more information on our website. Thank you so much for joining us, April.
Thank you. It was great.
You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows from the Central Standard page of KCUR.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the story behind the names of neighborhoods and parks around the city. Up to Date is next with the cost of autism, as well as the weekend to-do list. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, with help from Ross Steinmetz and Sangeeta Shastri. Our announcer is Kim Noble, and our program director is Bill Anderson. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, and this is KCUR.